Case number 9613, American Tower Corporation, south of Road 26, 50 feet west of Road 17. Amend the stipulation for approval for case number 9424, Omni Point Communications.
Stormy Sipe, 103 Brentwood Trail, Elgin, Illinois, 60120.
Swear the testimony you're about to give to be true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Absolutely.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. My name is David Hutt. I'm with Wilson, Howbrook & Byard, and we represent American Tower Corporation. And from American Tower Corporation with me tonight, I have one of their zoning specialists, Ms. Carmen Rajamani, and also their director of FAA and FCC compliance, Mr. Stormy Sipe. A summary report was filed with the board in which American Tower elaborated on some of the points that Mr. Sipe will go through and explain here in a few minutes. But I thought before he came up and maybe explain some more of the technical concerns that American Tower has, I would kind of try to reorient everybody to the history of this matter. American Tower owns the tower, which is on the property of David Banks, which is Route 26 Car Wash. This site is probably familiar to everybody because it's at the intersection as you're headed out of Millville towards Clarksville, where Roxana Road meets 26. Hawker's Market is there, Bob's Marine, 84 Lumber, and of course the car wash is also there. One of the tenants who leases space on the tower is OmniPoint Communications, or T-Mobile. And earlier this year, OmniPoint filed a request for a variance and special use exception to extend that tower from 150 feet to 180 feet. On April 19th of 2006, you all granted that request for a variance and special use exception with the stipulation that the tower have soft lighting installed at 75 feet and at the top of the tower, which changed to a strobe light during inclement weather. I assume that meant inclement weather. The request that's before the board tonight, and which Mr. Sipe will kind of go through a little bit as he goes through the FAA and FCC compliance issues, is first of all that no lighting be required for the tower because it's not required by the FAA or the FCC. Alternatively, if you believe that the Sussex County Ordinance requires that the tower be lit, we would request that the lighting be consistent with FAA regulations, which for a tower that's less than 200 feet, the lighting for that would be at the midpoint of the tower and at the top of the tower. In addition, there is the issue of a light which changes from soft light to a strobe light during inclement weather. American Tower is not familiar with a light that performs that function. Either that or this is being misunderstood by American Tower. And Mr. Sipe will, again, discuss what's available in the industry and what American Tower is familiar with. So at this time, unless you have any questions for me about the history of where we are or the status of this, I'll let Mr. Sipe go through the summary, which was filed with you, and explain some more about the issues with FAA and FCC compliance.
Mr. Chairman, board members, ladies and gentlemen, Sussex County, thank you for hearing me on behalf of American Tower. What I'd like to step you through is just a few points in regards to FAA and FCC. Under the Telecommunications Act of 1934, revised in 96, the FAA and the FCC were told by Congress to become basically on the same page. Excuse me, I've been up since 4 o'clock in Chicago time to get here. In that matter, the Congress has stipulated to the FAA and the FCC that they must have lighting systems, obstruction notices, and notifications all the same down the line so that all rules and regulations meet, thus allowing a pilot not to be disoriented, a customer or someone whom is building a structure, not to be ununderstanding of the differences between the two. prior to 1934 and the revision of 96, the FAA and the FCC had similar but far apart rules. And in 96, they came together. Now, having those types of approaches, argumentatively, it's critical for the FAA and the FCC to preserve the airspace. American Tower, primary goal, first and foremost, from the CEO all the way down, is compliance with all federal regulations. In doing so, we also meet any and all local and state requirements that are reasonable. I would not be here in front of you today if I did not believe that the lighting on the tower would not be reasonably not required. Pilots could potentially become disoriented if you have lights that are below the minimum requirements. Now, my understanding for the Sussex County's ordinance is due to agricultural pilots and or maybe mosquito maintenance. Now, as noted out in the summary, the agricultural pilots must maintain a minimum flight standard of 500 feet, AGL, above the ground when not dispersing or dispensing. Now, in this area, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, there are some small fields. Fields that do not or would not allow a plane, a pilot, or even a helicopter to dust those fields. So in essence, they cannot come within 500 feet of that structure above ground level. And since it is a population deemed by the FAA as near 8,000, it could also be considered a congested area, which would force them to go to a 1,000-foot level and only come below the 1,000-foot level to disperse in proper areas. Now, pursuant to the FAA rules, American Tower is required to file a 7460-1 application for them to review. Upon doing such, the FAA is going to review all the vector routes, all the information that they have available from IFR plans to flight status to what is in the area as an existing obstruction. Now, under those rules, there are stipulations that if you don't meet any of the criteria, you don't even have to file with the FAA. However, American Tower, under its rigorous review, makes sure prior to filing with the FAA that either one, it will not be a hazard, or two, it would be. And if so, we would adjust it accordingly. In addition to that, we look to see whether or not lighting would be a hazard to any air navigation in the area. So we also look at private industry, which the FAA does not. In doing so, we also look at all the vector and the possibilities, and we look up the land information around there. And when this tower was built by American Tower back in around 2000, it was obviously granted. The original concept for the construction was 199 feet. And at that time, the FAA did not require marking and lighting, as you could see in the attachment A. However, when we built the tower, we built it shorter. And we've had a couple changes to the FAA henceforth since we've added some other customers because we also have to relay frequency information to the FAA. As the tower stands today, it's 153 feet tall. Again, T-Mobile has asked for the variance and was granted to increase the structure. And you have placed the lighting technique onto the tower. Now, I have been in the industry for 22 years. I've done everything from bolting the towers together to the FAA regulations to RF frequencies. I have contacted three of the major controller systems out there, and none of them have ever heard of an inclement weather controller. So I was unable to even find that information out to see if it even existed. And to my knowledge, I've never seen one. In doing so, I did this to see what my opportunities would be to meet your ordinance. And I'm unable to meet that ordinance because no one manufactures one that is currently approved by the FAA, which, of course, your ordinance does stipulate that you want us to mark and light the tower in accordance to the federal government's rules. In addition, you make note that it should be every 50 feet in the ordinance, but yet in your stipulation you're saying 75 feet for one marker and then a light at the top of the tower. Now, under the FAA rules, this type of tower, when exceeding 150 feet, if it was to be lit due to the circumstances of being in a flight path, a departure in or departure out, some form of reasoning why it would be lit, the FAA would require you to have lights at the midsection and a beacon strobe at the top of the tower. And that beacon strobe only works from dusk to dawn, and it is turned on and off by what is called a photocell, which reads the illumination of the northern sky. So when the illumination or the light, if you will, falls to a certain level, it turns it on. Do you have a question? Okay, I wasn't sure. Now, that is the only system currently approved by the FAA. So in doing so, if I was to light the tower, and in requirements to what the FAA asks, as stipulated out in the page 3, it states that the FAA would recommend those certain types of lighting. And that if on my determination no hazard, as you can see at 153, and at the old one at 199, they stipulate that if we voluntarily light it, that they would request us to mark and light it in accordance to their system. This doing is to keep in compliant with all pilots so that they understand what they're doing. Now, a pilot can be confused or disoriented when flying. If the tower is lit in an area that should not be lit, and he's flying without instruments, and he sees a light, a single flashing beacon with midsection lights, and he comes down below the 500-foot level, he actually starts violating the FAA flight rules. In addition to that, as he is flying, if he encounters an obstruction that is of greater height of 500 feet, that does not leave him an accumulable amount of time to maneuver to miss the obstruction. Now, when the FAA reviews all this stuff, they make sure that the structure, they say no lighting, is not going to be a hazard to air navigation. And again, in statements that I've mentioned for the minimum safe altitudes, a crop duster or a mosquito maintenance personnel should come nowhere near the structure. And if they are, then that would be pilot error. And they're also in direct violation of the flight minimums operated by the FAA. In closing, I'd just like to note that should you deem us still required to have the lighting, as we see it not required, that you do grant us to light it in accordance with FAA rules, because I am unable to meet your rules. Because it says 50 feet, then you say 75 feet, in climate weather, it's not built, I get confused. And I've done everything I could to try and meet it. I thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions.
Any questions?
Thank you, sir.
As Mr. Sipe just ran through there at the end, the requested amendment would be that no lighting be required, as it's not required by the FAA or FCC. And at Exhibit A and Exhibit B, the determination of no hazard to air navigation, you have both the one for the prior tower as it exists, or the first approval, and then you have the one that was sought in April of this year, which actually indicates that it actually says up to 183 on this approval. Both of those indicate at about the midpoint of the page that based on their evaluation and study, marking and lighting are not necessary for aviation safety. And they go on to state, however, if marking and or lighting are accomplished on a voluntary basis, we recommend it be installed and maintained in accordance with FAA Advisory Circular 70/7460-1K, Change 1. And those were the requirements, of course, that Mr. Sipe just went through. As he indicated, there is some consternation here because the Sussex County Ordinance begins by saying all towers are required to be lit. Then it indicates that they should be lit at every 50 feet. And then the last sentence indicates that they need to be lit in accordance with FAA and FCC guidelines. And then on top of that, the stipulation that was placed in the April 19, 2006 approval of Omnipoint Communications application indicates 75 feet in the top of the tower. And that may have been because somebody was thinking that 75 feet was the midpoint of a 150-foot tower. But as the application was approved, that, of course, would no longer be the midpoint of the tower. Unless you have any questions for me, that will conclude our presentation.
Any questions from members of the board?
Your witness, and maybe I should have asked it when he was there, said that there are strobes that come on dusk to dawn, or dawn, dusk, yeah,
Photo
dusk
cell.
To dawn.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay. Those are the only ones that you're familiar with?
That is correct. I'm in the industry a long time. I actually chair the PCIA industry for the FAA subcommittee. What I can tell you also is that crop dusters, or agricultural pilots, if you will, and maintenance, are supposed to disperse during daylight hours, so even if we put a light on the tower, it's only going to come on during the night.
The dawn, the dusk light comes on as a result of lack of light?
The correct illumination of the northern hemisphere.
Okay.
So as it drops.
So if you had a particularly dark day because of a storm coming up or something like that, it would come on during that time frame as well?
It could, depending on the luminous
weather. If you hit that threshold of light?
That is correct. There is a threshold that it would turn it on.
I don't remember the origin of that stipulation that the board put on this one, although I know it's on several that have been approved over the last couple of months. Do any of you guys remember where that originated?
From our meeting with County Council.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. One other thing to follow up, Mr. Burrell. Mr. Sipe was telling me before we walked over here that he got to tour a lot of Sussex County today because he went down and visited the site. And he reviewed, and I don't know how many towers did you review? And
20 towers.
And they, I believe he saw photocells.
That is correct. Every structure that I stopped at was carrying an authorized FAA photocell and was illuminating the correct FAA lighting. There was one cell tower that had an additional set of side markers, which if you went by your rules would be close to a 50-foot interval. The tower was a little bit, about 170 foot, had three levels of lights. But yet it had a 3-foot strobe at the top of the tower. And understand, when we put a strobe on these towers, it is going to give off a lot of ground scatter. A lot of people that live in that area are going to have their homes lit up at night because it's so close to the ground. When they build these beacons, they put insulators on them so that they disperse in a manner that a pilot would see it, but it will still hit the ground. They are so bright, I get calls on a weekly basis of people complaining that the light is beaming into their house and keeping them up at night. And I can pretty much tell you that that's probably going to happen. A lot of the towers I looked at today were very rural. This tower, however, is very close to a mobile home park and several residents' houses. And all I can believe is that we're going to get calls of that, which then we will have to turn over to the board and say, you told us to light it. Now we have this problem. And we're going to have to tell them also, it's like, no, it's not required by any aviation requirement by the FAA or the FCC. It's a Sussex County's ordinance that we're deeming to meet, although it is not required on a federal level.
So once again, what is required by FAA?
No, the FAA does not require any lighting on the tower, nor does the FCC. Due to the fact that there is no vector route, nor allowable disbursement in the area, at a minimum maintained altitude of 500 feet is required by a small single prop plane and or a helicopter. And since in that direct area there is a cumulative population of near 8,000, they would have to be at a 1,000 foot level at a 2,000 foot radius.
So you were saying in daytime, spraying, I've seen it many a times, sprayers coming across foggy in the morning, that tower, that light should be on, flashing at that time, and might be 15 miles down the road, it's clear. I mean, we have got a lot of fog here in the morning.
I could imagine being so close to the ocean.
And that's one of the reasons why we put the lighting on that thing, because of the planes, because we had a pilot here too that did the flying.
I understand that. And also in regards to those regulations, an agricultural crop duster is required by law to find out what obstructions are in the area when he is going to go below flight altitude minimums. As a pilot, he is required not to make a hazard as an air safety requirement to personal property or human life. And it's also noted on the handout. Excuse me.
And I think what you're saying, in a foggy condition, if there's still going to be plenty, enough ambient light to turn off any lights.
That is correct.
So, yeah. So and it wouldn't matter if.
Might I add also, depending on the amount of light, it's a red light. Don't think of it as a stoplight. As a pilot can see it. You can't see a red light as a plane flies over it during the day. It has to be pretty much your twilight zone area for the lighting to be seen by a pilot.
I mean the strobe lights.
The strobe lights, correct.
And the only method approved by the FAA is the photocell.
That is correct. They also have provisions for older structures that have timers on them, but those timers are required to have a facilitator check that tower 24 hours, once every 24 hours, to make sure that it's functioning. And generally what that is like if you have an old broadcast tower, usually the station and the engineer is right there, so if there was a power outage, he'd reset the timer.
I think we were under the impression that there was a device to determine if weather was inclement or not.
I can't say that there isn't. What I can say is I've checked every FAA record, and there is not one approved. And I've checked with the three major lighting manufacturers, and they have nothing in their whole building or even in their up-and-comings that they're looking at for it.
I think they were saying there's a soft light, too, right? We understood?
Well, a soft light is...
We're under the impression it would just be a soft light that could, stay on and then change in inclement weather.
Yeah.
But there's not a device to determine if weather is inclement. There's only a device to determine if it's light or dark.
And the closest thing we could come to my understanding of soft lighting is what the FAA calls an L810 marker light. That's a 116-watt white light bulb that is covered by a red lens, and it's a steady burning 24 hours a day if we want it to, or basically it gets turned on by the photocell. And again, during the day, you're not going to see that red light.
Is there any strobes 24 hours a day?
You can make any strobes 24 hours a day, but again, if it's a red light, you won't see it.
You mean the people up there won't see it, but the people on the ground would?
Even the people on the ground would be very hard to see it.
Okay.
During the day.
Very much so.
That's not very intense.
That is why the FAA has other stipulations, which they call a medium dual system, where they have a 20,000 candela, or if you will, a 22,000-watt bulb that burns white, blinking during the day, which is only recommended for towers that are exceeding 200 feet because it is going to give off a lot of ambient light even during the day. And a pilot can see that from miles away during the day.
And even more at night.
And even more at night. Again, another reasonable cause for why they make sure lighting is only below 200 feet at certain areas is due to the pilot radius. Once you start putting a beacon on top of a tower that's 150 feet tall in a residential area, like I said, you get light splash. We are talking about an intersection here. That intersection, that light could blind someone as they're driving. And it is actually stipulated in the advisory circular that you're supposed to keep it away from traverse ways, and if you do, it has to be mounted in a certain directional way and so on and so forth. And a traverse way is anything that's a major highway, county highway, major road, thoroughway, or vessel way, meaning your rivers and so on and so forth. And the Coast Guard is our biggest one. They're on many of our towers. And we always have to build those towers tall so that it does not interfere with navigation of vessels and, of course, highways and stuff like that.
How many towers does American Tower have?
American Tower currently has owned and managed 22,000 towers that I am required to make sure are compliant. Out of those 22,000 towers, we have 10,500 that are lit. Out of those 10,500 that are lit, I have personally required American Tower to light 472 of them due to reasonable cause of a vector route and or a private utility landing strip. I am the first and foremost going to be the first one to tell someone that they must light the tower for American Tower because there is a hazard. Before I make that decision, though, I go through every rigorous review that an FAA official would. I also look at, again, all the private industry that's in the area, and I also look at all the information in regards to the land at, near, and around before I make that decision. And again, in this case, I can find no reasonable cause to why a plane should be flying below the FAA operation minimums.
And the minimum for a lighted tower is 500?
I'm sorry?
The minimum for a lighted tower is what?
200 feet.
200 feet.
You are to start marking and lighting a tower required at 200 feet regardless of its position. However, if the tower falls within an instrument approach, an engine out, engine in, flight navigational, vector route, vessel, or traverse way, the FAA reviews that and will stipulate lighting when necessary. Again, I had mentioned earlier that if a pilot's running without instruments, that is called dead reckoning. They're using a compass and usually some kind of map in their cockpit, and they're looking out the window to see where the street lights are and stuff like that, or they're following a river. That's what they call the traverse way when you light those towers. And they're going to make sure that those are, you know, if there are standard vector routes, they're going to make you light those towers. Again, the intersection that it's at aren't considered dead reckoning vectors by the FAA.
In your opinion, is it safe to say that the FAA requirements are they're effective in protecting small, you know, small aircraft operators? Or
yes, sir, they are.
So, okay.
And the reason why I'm very 100% able to say that is because a pilot must meet all their requirements as a pilot. And that's what the FAA is sturgeon upon. And when they make those final determination, no hazards, that's part of what they're reviewing.
Well, as Mr. Workman was saying, you know, we did have, I don't know if it was on this case or another case, we had a crop duster pilot that suggested that, you know, a tower would cause a safety hazard, and that would only, you're saying, only if he made it a safety hazard.
That is correct.
Okay. So, sir, let me get to, what's the height of a plane flying, the lowest?
The minimum altitude operating in a non-roll is 500 feet AGL.
Is that different in ag?
I think
agricultural?
Yes.
Yes, sir. It's different only at the time of disbursement, where he is reasonably going in to disperse his product, and then a reasonable pullout and turnout, which means he is not allowed to fly at 200 feet from here to here if he's dispersing. That means he has to fly up to 500 feet, come across, come down, disperse, come up, back up to 500 feet.
Is that changed by counties?
Is that changed by counties? No,
I mean,
it's a federal rule.
Federal rule, but...
So that's everywhere. County can't... supersede that.
No, that's a federal rule. No pilot is allowed to fly below 500 feet without having that special aviation certificate for agriculture. And when doing so, there are specific rules that they must follow, which I've set forth out in the handout.
Who does a check-in on that?
The ATC, which is the air traffic controllers. Every plane that is registered with the FAA also carries, you know, basically the homing device. And the FAA does check for altitudes.
So it's not like guys are out there riding under the 500.
That's correct. Back in the days, what they used to call they fly as a crow does,
right,
are not allowed. A crop duster, if you will, agricultural maintenance for mosquitoes, must file a flight plan.
And he's monitored by ATC.
He's monitored by ATC. He takes off. He has to call in, and what is the squawk 2000 to the ATC. And when he squawks in, the ATC has him on their blip. Just like they do every commercial airline, every military, every helicopter for news, you name it, they see it.
But for agriculture, for farming, they don't do that.
Yeah. That's what you're saying.
No, they do.
If they're in the air, they do.
If they're in the air, if they're a private person driving off their back dirt driveway, and pardon me for anything, they still have to fly at those specific minimums, and they must squawk into the nearest ATC, which is their traffic controller.
So any plane other than an altar light has to have a...
That is correct.
A homing device to be monitored.
That is correct. An altar light, when you're bringing that one up, is another good case scenario. There are requirements for the ultralight also. They are required to maintain distances from obstructions. That's why when ultralights fly, they are supposed to fly at specific zoning points as not to be a hazard to air navigation and or personal or property on the ground. So generally, your ultralights are way out in the middle of nowhere, and if there is going to be an obstruction, they're supposed to be having knowledge of that obstruction, as do hot air balloons. They are pilots also, and they also have to maintain the same minimum of 500 feet, except for when they're descending or if they have, obviously, a complication.
The wind
pulls up or something like that, but that's why they're still required to be a pilot, because if the wind picks up, they're going to have to be advised of what's going on, i.e. looking over the basket to make sure that they're not going to run into something. And if they do, they have to either gas up to go over the object, or they're going to have to decrease to get into the wind variance so that it blows it to the left or the right.
So, sir, you're telling me every time he lands that plane, he's take back off again with loaded again, he's got to call in?
That is correct. That is normal flight operation procedures for the FAA.
Any other questions from members of the board? Thank you.
Thank you. Good question.
Thank you.
Are there persons present that would like to speak in favor of? Anyone here in opposition? Hearing none, chair will entertain a motion.
Chairman, I make a motion we take case number 9613 under advisement.
Second. It's been regularly moved and seconded. We take case number 9613 under advisement. All those in favor give the usual voting sign.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carried.
Case number 96.